Hey, I'm Scott, and I'm an American in Bangkok. Got some interesting stuff to go over this week. First, I wanted to get into I'm going to talk about my hip again, okay? I'm sorry, but I got to do it. For those who have had hip replacements or who may have them in the future, maybe you can benefit from what I'm telling you, but it's been 2 months now since my surgery, okay? Pretty much to the day, okay? 2 months exactly. And I gotta say that in the first couple of weeks, I felt really, I didn't feel real strong, but I felt like the pain was gone and I feel great. I'm like, wow, this is a magical surgery. I had some exercises that I was given to do to make my hip flexor stronger and to stretch the hip. And I had been doing them, and I kind of, you know, slowed down on them a little bit as time passed. And I was using a cane in the very beginning for the first couple days just to make sure that when I was going up and down the stairs, I didn't have any problems. And anyway, now it's been, you know, it's been 2 months, and actually, in the last 2 weeks, I've started feeling pain again, and initially I thought, well, maybe I'm just overdoing it, but I'm not really doing all that much physically. I had wanted to start exercising last week. I really am not in a position to do that. When I say that I walk a minimum amount. Right now, I mean, I am not walking very much. Generally, if I say I'm walking or I'm out taking photos somewhere, you're talking about 4 or 5 hours of walking, maybe one or two stops somewhere along the line to get something to drink or something to eat or something like that. But I'll walk for half a day or the entire day looking for photos or whatever I'm doing. And I'm not doing that now. Now I'm basically in the mall. I'll go to the mall. I'll walk inside the mall. I'll run an errand. I'll go to the bank, or I'll go to the grocery store, or I'll buy something that the kids need or that I need. I'll go to Starbucks, and then I walk from Starbucks, go outside, get in a taxi, and take the taxi back home. So I walk around inside the house. I walk downstairs. I go upstairs. You know, I walk around in my house. But it's not like I'm walking 10 miles, 20 miles a day, okay? I'm not. So I figure I should be fine. But my hip was really hurting me a couple of days ago to the point where I just had to lay down. I was miserable. My hip is throbbing, and I'm thinking to myself, this sucks, you know? So I think I'm going to go to the doctor in a couple of weeks and just get a checkup. But what's funny is that I've rested for a couple of days, and my hip actually feels better. When I stand up, if I've been sitting down for even 5 minutes, especially when I wake up in the morning, if I stand up and I just start walking, I really have to start slowly. It takes me a little while to get going. I have to get my limp on. I'll limp for first 20 feet, 30 feet, and then I start getting moving, and my hip loosens up, I guess. I don't know. And I'm able to walk somewhat normally. It's always in my head, though, that there's that little twinge of pain in my hip. There'll be no kicking with my right leg, I can tell you that. I won't be kicking ever again with that leg. And which, that's fine with me. I don't have a problem with that. But I would like to be able to walk. And so I'm hoping that just me resting and, just resting and not doing a lot of walking will allow me to heal to where I don't feel pain. Because initially I thought, oh, it'll just take 4 to 6 weeks to heal. Well, it takes 4 to 6 weeks to get to the point where you can walk and you don't feel a lot of pain, and I already went through that. If I do walk a long period of time, I feel pain, so maybe it's going to take me longer to completely heal, which is why the doctor didn't want me going to India. From what I've read and from what the doctors told me, it can take up to 6 months, even a year, to completely heal. So I'm just going to have to take it easy. And I do still want to go to the Congo. I got some changes going to be made to the funding program that I have online. Hopefully I'll be able to make it there. And I've got some other places I want to go. I'm going crazy sitting around. It really drives me nuts. I mean, I'm trying to be mellow, but it's not easy. Anyway, so let me get to the things I want to talk about. The first thing was I got a question from a guy about getting a driver's license, a motorcycle driver's license in Thailand. So he wrote to me, "Hey, Scott, I searched your videos but did not find anything that covered this subject. I am on and off to Thailand for work and recreation and been doing so for 20 years. I want to ask you, is it possible for a foreigner to make a motorcycle driving license in Bangkok?" In answer to that question, yes, it most certainly is. I searched several sites. Most of them say you require some kind of an address in Thailand. Well, not say you require. No, not I don't require. Government requires some kind of address in Thailand and a special type of visa. Is an address of a hotel good enough? No. Unless you have a non-immigrant visa and you're living in the hotel. For visa, I got a two-month tourist visa, or if I'm in the country for less time, just 1 month stamp at the airport. I'm healthy. Now, here's where I get into the part. You know, he wrote a couple of sentences, and that's all I needed. And now he's got to get into all these preambles, and which doesn't do a bit of fucking good. I don't care, and neither does the immigration, or rather the driving, what is it, the, what do they call it here? Well, the place you get your driver's license from, whatever it's called here, Department of Motor Vehicles. All this bullshit that he's going to tell me doesn't matter, so I'm going to read it anyway. "I'm healthy and fit and drive a car in my own country without a major accident for years." Well, that's nice to know, but it doesn't mean a fucking thing to the driver's, the DMV here. "I do not hold a motorcycle license at home, but I am fit to drive under almost every condition." Almost. So what conditions are you not capable of driving under? "I did this in Vietnam, where roads was okay, and in Myanmar, where roads are real shit. I'm taking it English is not his first language. "And a lots of times all around Thailand, rented bikes up country to explore the areas that I visit. Until today, I was never stopped and checked for a license. The people who rent me the bikes are usually well known in their communities, and they told me if I had any problem with the police, I should call them and they'll sort it out. Well, that is kind of a hairy situation. I don't want to rely on anyone, as in these later years, my motorcycle driving has become more frequent, and I am thinking to make a tour around Isan, northern Thailand, for several weeks and want to be on the safe side. So what do you think? Is it possible? Even if I'm not a typical expat living in Thailand long time?" "My question is just about the motorcycle license, not about the car, because I have an international driver's license, but as I said earlier, it's only for the car. Thank you, Andre." Well, basically, I already answered your question, which is you have to have a non-immigrant visa. You cannot get a Thai driver's license with a tourist visa. Now, that's the legal standing. That's the legal way of thinking. Now, I don't know. Some people may go in and they may throw some guy a couple thousand baht and he just gives him a license. I don't know. I'm talking about legally, no, you can't with a tourist visa. You need to have a non-immigrant visa. Now, here's the part that I found a little bit of trouble with. He's got this thing here that says, "The people who rent me the bikes are usually well-known in their community." Again, this doesn't mean a fucking thing, Okay, it's nice that the people are well known in their community, and you know, people, the police might know them, and everybody knows them, and they're respected. But the bottom line is, it doesn't matter to you. All that doesn't matter, because you're not going to get anything for nothing. Okay, they're not going to help you and expect nothing. Generally, that doesn't happen when it comes to dealing with the police. Okay, now, this brings me to my next point where he says, if any problem with the police, I should just call them and they'll sort it out. Now, I'm here to tell you that you do not want somebody dealing with the police for you unless they are your best buddy. And I'm not talking about your Thai friend that you met 3 weeks ago that happens to own the place that you're renting or something like that. I'm talking about you got a buddy who you can count on, who knows Thailand better than you, and who can deal with the police and knows how to talk to them. That's it, okay? I don't care if they're extremely well known in the community. It doesn't make a bit of fucking difference. If you crash your motorcycle and you kill somebody, or you cause them to, somebody dies in the process of the accident, in the midst of the accident or whatever, guess what? You're fucked if you don't have a license and insurance. And no amount of talking to the guy who's well-known in the community is going to straighten that out. I mean, you might get it straightened out, but it's going to cost you $1 million baht or something like that. Now, I know I have two examples here. One is, I was in an accident a long time ago in Udon Thani. I'm driving along, minding my own fucking business, going straight. And some pinhead, and that's what he was a fucking pinhead, an idiot, you know, some little villager who fucking had his head up his ass. He's got, you know, his mother, his aunt, his uncle, and a baby, all on this little motorcycle, crammed on it. He's looking backwards, and he drove right into me out in a lane. I'm going like 50 miles an hour. And I see him, I think, oh, I got to get out of the way. And I started to swerve, and boom, there's a car coming from the other direction. So I just let him hit me. We went down in the middle of the road. The car passed me up, didn't hit me. I was lucky. And that was the end of that. Now, long story short of it, he wanted money from me because he said I hit him. But he hit me to the side. I was going straight, minding my own business. Okay, it wasn't like he pulled out in front of me and was ahead of me and I rammed him from behind. That didn't happen. He hit me straight right into the side. Okay? And I went down. I was all scraped up and bleeding. My motorcycle was, you know, needed a lot of work. He had smashed into the front end. And his motorcycle had some damage. Of course, he came to me and said, I want 30,000 baht. And I told him, fuck you. Because I was pissed off. This asshole hits me with his motorcycle and then comes to me and says, oh, you need to give me 30,000 baht. And I said, you need to fuck off, pal, because it ain't going to happen. And I actually said, I'll fight you. Let's fight for that money right now. And he didn't want to do that. I was fucking pissed. Here I am bleeding and this asshole is asking me for money. So it goes to show you where some people's mindset is. The police came. Now, I didn't have a license, okay? I didn't have a license. I didn't have insurance. Now, there was insurance on the motorcycle. It was my girlfriend's motorcycle. And I didn't have a license because I wasn't really driving it all that much. And I just didn't even, I thought, eh, fuck it. We're in the village, you know? But I had been going back and forth into the city using the thing. And I was just about into the village when we had the accident. And, you know, this guy pushed me for the money. And then the police came and the police said, no, he doesn't have to give you any money. What are you talking about? And the police said, if you guys can't work it out, then come to the station. Otherwise, work it out, figure it out between yourselves. I was like, okay. Better than I go into the police station because I got no license. And if worse comes to worse, they're going to get me for not having a license and being involved in an accident without a license. And, you know, I just didn't really want to get involved in it. So my girlfriend, you know, she showed up and she started talking to these people. And I was so pissed I didn't want to talk to them. I was like, get this motherfucker away from me. I can't even talk to this cunt. And she's like, oh, calm down, calm down. I'm like, no, I'm not calming down. Fuck this guy. I ain't giving him shit. I told her, don't you give him a fucking dime. So what does she do? She negotiates with him. She gives him 2,000 baht. And I had to fix the motorcycle, okay, which cost me about 12,000 baht. Now, it was fucked up. But, you know, had I had the license, I would have said, yeah, let's go in. Let's go into the police. And the guy would have been like, he probably would have been like, oh, no, I don't know if I want to do that. And if he did go into the police station, he would have lost. Or at least there was a good chance he would have lost, or I would have not had to pay anything. Okay? I might have still had to fix the motorcycle. But the point is that you don't want to be driving without a license and just saying, oh, well, if there's a problem, I'll call the police. And the police come, I'll call my friend down the street. They're really well known in the community. That is the dumbest fucking thing that you can do. Okay? Because you're relying on somebody else. And one of the rules that I have is don't put yourself in a position of disadvantage. And if you don't have your license and you're driving, you're fucked. Because you're at a disadvantage if you get into an accident, if you're driving the motorcycle and you have a problem with the car and you start yelling at them or something, and the police come, and you're fucked. So, you know, it's just idiotic to think like this guy. And hopefully he'll get his license no matter what. I don't think he's going to, because he doesn't have a non-immigrant visa. But that just goes to show you, you know, where some people's mindset is. Now, I saw this article earlier today about Thailand still in denial over teenage sex. And that means our staggering teen pregnancy rate will keep climbing. One thing that really strikes me as not only odd, but fucked up, is that although Thais, they know full well what's going on. They know, listen, Thai people are like every other human being on the planet. They want to fuck. They like to fuck. They like to have sex. They want to make love. Whatever you call it, they want to have their fun. They're attracted to men, women, whatever, you know. They want to have sex. And people who are young, they got the raging hormones, the testosterone, and they, you know, I mean, a guy is walking around, he sees a girl with big tits, and his dick gets fucking hard for the rest of the day. I mean, so, you know, I don't see them stopping this. And what's so funny about Thailand is a lot of times the Thai government will come out talking about the pregnancy rate right around Valentine's Day, as if Valentine's Day people are going to be screwing more. Oh, we're in love. It's Valentine's Day. Let's have sex. You know, like people aren't having sex the rest of the year. So I don't really think that the Valentine's Day strategy is very good. But it I guess, let's see here. What does it say? It says there is, wow. It says in 2012 alone, almost 130,000 Thai teens gave birth. And then it says that 5.38% of the teenage girls between 15 and 19 became pregnant in 2012. And they're trying to reduce it to 5%, but I don't think it's worked. And, you know, one of the problems is that a lot of times the girls, they get pregnant and they drop out of school, whether because of peer pressure or pressure to provide or whatever it might be. But it definitely changes your life. I mean, listen, I was, how old was I? I was 30. How old was I when Alex was born? Let's see, he's 14. I'm 52, so that's 38. I was 37 when my wife got pregnant, and 38 when he was born. And, you know, I just find, you know, for me, it was a huge deal. And I was 38 years old. Now, granted, I was a little young in the head. I still am. At 52, I'm probably still, you know, I got the mind of a 20-year-old. But, you know, I can only imagine for a girl that's, 15, 16 years old, and she's in school, and the next thing you know, she's knocked up, and she doesn't want to get rid of it, and, you know, or she's scared, or whatever it is, and that's one reason why. I mean, I've already had the talk with my two sons, and I'm going to have more detailed talks once I see them starting to want to be around girls more. Right now, we've got a tight leash on them. You know, they go to school, they come straight home, and that's it. They don't really do a lot of things with their friends. They're not in a position where they can be alone with a girl and they can go and, you know, knock it out. But I know that probably in the next year, I'm going to have to start really, really getting into more detail with them. I haven't got into too much detail. They know a little bit. They know enough that they know about the parts and everything and how things work. But they don't know everything that's involved and what it entails to have a child. They know from my wife and I. They know, like, oh well, you know, we're gonna have to buy a new refrigerator. Oh, we're gonna have to buy a new air conditioner that costs money. They know that if you want to get things that you got to pay, well, where's that money come from? You know, sometimes Nicholas will say something to me, oh, I want to try to get that. I'm like, well, how much does it cost? 3,000 baht. How much you got? 700. Well, guess what? You got to come up with some more money. So that's something that is interesting to see in the news. And I don't think it's going to change, honestly, because for some reason, Thais, they have a hard time talking about sex publicly, like in school and that kind of thing. And that this is the thing. I have never really had a problem talking about it. It's not like my favorite subject to talk about, but I've never had a problem with it. And usually, in all my experience with Thai women, I've never really had a problem talking to them about sex. The key, though, is to get them to feel comfortable enough with you to where you can talk about it and, you know, they're not grossed out about it. I mean, I start saying things to my kid about you know, a girlfriend. He's like, shut up, Daddy. I don't want to hear it, you know. But the thing is that it's important to keep that line of communication open. And I think we have a pretty good, we communicate pretty well. We're a pretty close family. Okay, and I'm happy about that, but I just can imagine some kid that's out in the village, and, you know, she's got her little boyfriend pressuring her to have sex with him, and, you know, she's 15 years old, and she's thinking, I really like this guy, what am I going to do? And then, you know, she's like, all right, well, fine, I'll give it up, and then she gives it up, and the next thing you know, she's pregnant, and she's going, oh my, you know, what am I going to do? She's a baby. You know, I mean, let's face it, like, you know, 25-year-old Thai women, to me, sometimes they're like 15-year-old Western women. They just, and then I guess there's some 25-year-old Thai women that are like, you know, 40-year-old women. But anyway, I just thought that was interesting. And then the one other thing I wanted to talk about, and wow, you know, guess, I feel bad for the guy, but guess what happened? The head monk at the Tiger Temple was mauled by one of the tigers. Now, of course, a message came out just, I think it was yesterday, that he was walking the tiger and he tripped and fell, and the tiger instinctively jumped on him and that's the only reason that he was attacked. But I find that troubling, okay? Because here's the thing: it doesn't matter if he fell or what the reason is. Tigers are wild animals for the 100th fucking time, and you know, if you make the wrong move or you do something that interests them or excites them or whatever, they're going to jump on you or they're going to go after you, or they're going to try to play with you. And they don't play like little six-year-old kids. You know, when they play, they might rip your face off. So this is the thing. And, you know, I don't know yet. I'm trying to find out. It says that the temple is no longer allowed to exploit the tigers and use and open the temple for tourists to come in. You know, they got almost 150 tigers there, and they got a bunch of other animals there. And I think that they're running on fumes at that place. You know, they're on their last legs. They spent a shitload of money to get the place right. And quite frankly, I've never liked the place. I've never believed in the kind of bullshit story that, I think it's bullshit. The story that they give about how the animals were, a couple cubs were brought in, and then some boars came in, and then a couple more boars came in, and then all these little animals started coming because they knew that they could get food and that the temple was was a friendly haven for the animals. To me, that's complete horse shit, okay? And I have a real problem believing anything that a monk running a temple, earning such a huge amount of money, says. You know, maybe it's me, maybe I should believe them or whatever, but I don't, okay? I just don't. And, you know, they don't even feed these tigers red meat. I mean, what the fuck is that? That poor tigers, you know, I mean, tigers eat meat. They want meat, and they give them, I guess, rice and, boiled chicken is what they give them, okay? And, you know, just this and the inherent danger that being around wild animals, it's just dangerous. And, you know, you bring in people there and you can say, oh, these tigers they're really tame. They know us and they really love us so much. And it's bullshit. I mean, and the thing is that the tourists are like, oh, look at the pretty little tiger. Well, why don't you look at the tiger while the tiger's running around in the forest that there's a big cage around or something like that. I mean, that's bad enough. But when you put younger people in contact with wild animals like this, then, you know, you're just asking for problems. And in 2013, there was a girl, a British girl, that was scarred for life. She was, you know, bit, scratched up, and, you know, the thing was 400 pounds, and she got, I think it was her leg that got, let me see here. Wait a minute. This was a woman that I'm talking about, a woman, okay? She got bit through her thigh. And then there was a Thai woman that suffered a severe head and arm injuries after being knocked down to the ground and mauled by a tiger. And meanwhile, a tourist from New Zealand was hospitalized for weeks after touching a tiger's head at a park in northern Thailand. And then the original person I was talking about was a guy who stepped inside the cage to pet one of the cats, and then he ended up getting dragged off by the tiger, and he had all kinds of injuries, and he was hospitalized for quite some time. And I don't understand this. I don't understand what it is that tourists find so alluring that they have to go to these places. I went to a place once with my mother when she came and visited. We all went, my wife, my kids, and my mother. And first we saw some orangutans fighting in Muay Thai. And I had seen that once before, and I didn't like that. because I think it's, you know, it's exploitive. I mean, you know, it's like, come on, man. Why are you training the monkeys to do that? They're going to fight on their own, but don't put them in Muay Thai trunks and then, you know, get them to fight so that you can make a buck. I don't know. It just seems to me a bit exploitive. And then at the same place, we saw a couple tigers. And the tigers are just sitting there. They had no room to walk around. They were, I forget the name of the place, but they were in this place, and they basically were behind glass inside, and they had, like, it was probably the size of a small apartment, one-bedroom, you know, studio apartment. And they really had no room to walk, and they're pacing back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And then there's another one that was just laying there. And to me, that just seems like a waste. You know, I don't know. I know I go on about this sometimes, but I don't know what the alternative is other than, you know, the other problem is that if you let them go, they're not going to be able to fend for themselves. So that you got 150 tigers that need to be taken care of. And what are you going to do? You're going to put them all down? I mean, that doesn't seem right either. And it's not easy to get rid of 150 tigers because that's, first of all, it's expensive, and second of all, it's a major tax to be able to have to take care of that many animals. And then, you know, if you were just to say, okay, we already have these taken care of, tigers in the wild are extremely endangered, and you know, who's to say that them being in captivity, at least some of them being in captivity, I mean, I don't know, you know, what the thing is, once you put them in captivity, then you can't ever release them again, so, you know, it's a double-edged sword. You want to protect them out in the wild, but if you are too protective, and you try to, like, put them in a zoo so that people can see them, and it, you know, it raises awareness and all this other bullshit, then you get this problem where you got a bunch of tigers who, although they're wild enough to rip you to shreds, they're not wild enough to go out and fight with other tigers and live out in the wild and go hunt for themselves. So, anyway, I have rambled on enough. Until next time, I am Scott. I'm an American in Bangkok. Choke D, lat jerk and mine.